Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. Howard Walensky is a retired health journalist who is now giving us an inside look at his own medical diagnoses and treatments. Earlier articles on MedPage Today followed his journey with prostate cancer. The articles we're going to read today follow him from his diagnosis with type 2 diabetes, apparently abbreviated as T2D, through to his treatment. Through his personal journey, he talks a lot about medications, diet, finding the right doctor, and how his changing health has impacted his life. We start with his patient's journey titled Hello Diabetes, and this was posted on June 28, 2017. On a recent Friday, I went to the lab for a blood draw at my internist's office in Chicago's south suburbs. My phlebotomist-friendly vein popped up reliably, blood was drawn, my fate was cast. My doctor, Marwin Bagdon, MD, had ordered the test because my blood glucose levels had been trending up. The blood test was preparation for a doctor's visit the following Wednesday. My internist had ordered the test because my blood glucose levels had been trending up. On Sunday, I got a preview of what was to come. I received an email alert from the portal from Advocate Medical Group. My test results were available online. I looked. Glucose, 141.0 milligrams per deciliter, reference range 65 to 99. And hemoglobin A1C, 7.8%, reference range 4.5 to 5.6. The latter providing a three-month view of average glucose levels. 3 months earlier, my glucose was 126 milligrams per deciliter, and 6 months earlier, it was 102. This was my first A1C. You don't need a medical degree to know what my results mean. Hello, diabetes. Diabetes at age 69 was the latest stop on my personal health journey, which included a surprise ST elevation myocardial infarction, STEMI, at age 57, and Gleason 6 low-risk prostate cancer at age 65. I asked my preventive cardiologist, Matthew Sorrentino, MD of University of Chicago Medicine, if he wanted a copy of my panels and the A1C. The labs fit the criteria for diabetes. Diet can be very helpful to control this. Let me know of any questions I can help with, he wrote. Officially, I hadn't received the diagnosis yet. As a health reporter, I had written about diabetes. My most recent article about research on contact lenses to read glucose levels and avoid the frequent needle stick. I knew diabetes is a common and growing problem with potentially serious complications if unchecked. More than 29 million Americans with diabetes, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. One in four people with diabetes don't know he or she has it. Add to that the 86 million who have prediabetes. When I saw Bagdon, he sensed I already knew the score. Still, he broke the news gently. In my experience, some doctors can shine when they have to deliver bad news. Bagdon did. He was reassuring. He told me he knew, based on previous experiences with the STEMI and the prostate cancer, that I would educate myself and take appropriate steps. Weight loss, improved diet to control carbs and increased exercise, to control the disease in its early stages and head off complications, including heart and blood vessel damage, neuropathy, nephropathy, retinopathy, foot damage, and more. Diabetes can be a lot to get your head around. You are playing for keeps. Bagdon personalized the dietary changes. He said I should eat more like him and reduce the carbs. On occasion I could, as does he, have some barbecue, even though ribs are drenched with sugar-laden sauce. He said I could eat almost anything if I kept track of the carbohydrates and proteins. Bagdon said the scale was my new friend. It was a way to track my progress. He said food really is medicine with diabetes. He said some of his patients don't handle diabetes well and get into serious trouble. He knew my health journey well, including Gleason 6 prostate cancer, as well as hypercholesterolemia and a STEMI that had been along for most of the ride in recent years. He said he knew I could be disciplined. I knew I could too. I lost 40 pounds with Weight Watchers 5 years ago. I used to exercise every day, but I regained the pounds as life got in the way. Now I had to go all in. My life and health were on the line. I asked Bagdon about the role of genetics. He downplayed it because genetics is more a disease factor in younger people. I will have my 70th birthday in September. Still, my father developed type 2 diabetes in his 60s. My brother Steve, who is 3 years younger than me, was diagnosed 15 years ago at age 52. He's controlled his diabetes well. Bagdon referred me to a diabetes clinic to learn more about diabetes, get instruction from a dietitian, and pick up a glucometer. Steve called to check up on me. He shared his daily meal plans and his strategies to control his carbs. He substitutes healthier sweet potatoes for white potatoes. He occasionally eats ribs and other seemingly taboo foods. Little tips like these make diabetes seem manageable. Steve and I and our wives are going on a 3-week trip together soon. I plan to study at his dining table. I fully expect to control this with dietary changes and exercise, plus Bagdon prescribed metformin, 2,000 milligrams daily, to lower blood glucose levels by improving the way the body handles insulin. This isn't a death sentence, my brother stressed. In fact, one friend who learned about my diagnosis via my Facebook page said there may be a silver lining to taking metformin. It's being studied as a life extension drug. I told my urologist, Brian Helfand, MD, PhD, that I might not be able to go back to our favorite Chicago hot dog joint. This is terrible. Can you get on track so we can go back to Portillo's? He said. The good news is that some reports suggest that diabetes may be protective for prostate cancer, but maybe because of metformin? There will be life after my diabetes diagnosis, and maybe an occasional hot dog. The next patient's journey titled Learning to Eat Right, and this was posted by Howard Walensky on October 11th, 2017. I've paid attention to diet and weight on and off as an adult, mostly off. Through my 30s, I was thin as a dime, but eventually middle age caught up with me as I put on weight and cholesterol became an issue. In 2004, when I was 57, I had a rude awakening. I experienced a mild, strange twitch in my chest and a radiating pain on my right arm, atypical MI symptoms. But the cardiologist said I'd experienced the legendary widowmaker. Angiography revealed a 97% blockage of the left anterior descending artery. Two stents were implanted. But no one could tell me exactly why this had happened. The cardiologist said I was a rare patient whose HDL and LDL were the same, 70. Although there was no definite cause cited, one likely explanation given to me was that it was an inflammatory reaction in which plaque broke off and blocked the artery. The STEMI did virtually no permanent damage, and thanks to 40 years of exercise that created collateral circulation, I beat the odds of recurrent MI. Life resumed. I consulted back then with a dietitian who recommended a heart-healthy diet. Pretty much what I was doing already. Salmon twice a week, lots and lots of vegetables and fruits, oatmeal every morning, and turkey sandwich for lunch day after day. Virtually no red meat. Instead, I had chicken, more turkey, some pasta, and vegetarian entrees for dinner. I was Mr. Low Fat. They say you should get a chronic disease and take good care of it, and you'll live a long life. I was on that path. I stuck with the diet religiously for about 5 years and kept up my exercise, but I found I packed on weight more easily in my 60s. The strains of life and work, plus the boredom and monotony of the diet, got to me. I got body slammed at age 63 in 2010 with the diagnosis of prostate cancer. I lucked out again. I was diagnosed with Gleason 6, Only a tiny sliver of low-risk cancer has ever been seen in a single core, once in 5 biopsies. I've been on active surveillance for 7 years. I asked the urologists I've seen about diet and prostate cancer. They basically said not much was known. They offered little advice other than stay away from red meat, eat tomatoes, keep the weight down. I participated in a dietary study through the University of Chicago, but I landed in the control group. They only handed me a pamphlet and said I needed to lose weight. I was disappointed. So I joined Weight Watchers and dropped about 40 pounds. Diet boredom eventually set in again, even though I knew better. In June 2017, I got hit again. Now the pancreas. It was a big one, and it happened fast. I went from being diagnosed with prediabetes to type 2 diabetes in a matter of months. Ugh. These chronic diseases seemed to be sending me a message. My fasting blood glucose was 141 milligrams per deciliter, just over the line from prediabetes. But my A1C, a 2 to 3 month reading, the gold standard, was 7.8%, well into T2D land. My doctor told me food now was going to be my medicine, plus 2,000 milligrams of metformin. Off to the diabetes clinic for me. There, a nurse practitioner gave me the gospel according to the American Diabetes Association. I had to pay attention to carbs. I was no longer Mr. Low Fat. I should eat loads of vegetables. I like broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts. I could enjoy blueberries, strawberries, and raspberries, but needed to be careful about other fruit that could send my blood sugar soaring. The NP said ADA allowed me 130 to 145 grams of carbs per day. I'm a compliant patient. It turns out I misunderstood what the NP told me, or she wasn't clear enough. I found it difficult to reach that level of carbs daily. I found myself adding bread to reach those levels. It was a struggle. When I finally saw Gwen Woodruff, MBA, RD, CDE, dietitian, diabetes educator at Advocate South Suburban Hospital in Hazelcrest, Illinois, a month later, she informed me I didn't have to consume so many carbs. I complained I had to force myself to eat 3 meals a day. She didn't laugh. She said I should eat when I was hungry and not feel compelled to eat 3 meals per day. Woodruff said I needed to have produce and protein at every meal. Healthy eating and blood sugar control are not just about how many carbs you consume, she said. It's what ratio of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats you have at your meal. Eat protein at every meal and snack to help stabilize your blood sugars. She described carbs in bread, cereal, rice, pastas, and crackers as dietary crack and should be minimized. I bid farewell to many of my favorites, crusty pizza, spaghetti, oatmeal. It was easier for me to go cold turkey initially than to do more of a balancing act. She suggested I might consider a very low-carb diet. We could discuss that at a later date. Meanwhile, I lost 5 pounds since my first visit, even though I'd made rookie mistakes. I was traveling in the Pacific Northwest for most of the next month. I could observe the diet habits of my younger brother Steve, who has controlled T2D for 15 years. I was a newbie and stricter than Steve. I didn't force myself to eat carbs. In fact, I had maybe 20 to 40 grams of carbs per day versus the up to 145 grams recommended by ADA per day. On the road, I was puzzled about what I perceived as the differences between a heart-healthy and an anti-cancer diet with low fat and high carbs versus a low-carb diet for diabetes. By chance, through a prostate cancer support group, I heard about a booklet about prostate cancer and nutrition written by Natalie Ledesma, MS, RD, CSO of the University of California, San Francisco, and Smith Integrative Oncology. She wrote, "Good nutrition may reduce the incidence of prostate cancer and help reduce the risk of prostate cancer progression. there are many studies currently being conducted that will help to further understand how diet and prostate cancer are related. Current research already shows that improved nutrition reduces risk of heart disease, diabetes, and obesity, and usually improves overall quality of life. Sounded promising. She recommended, based on research, plenty of fruits and vegetables and high fiber, whole grains, and beans, legumes. But the dietitians and NPs I saw had steered me away from fruits and beans and legumes. There are leg men. I am, as it happens, a legume man, a lentil lover. I wrote an email to Ledesma. Ledesma congratulated me on staying the course with prostate cancer. She noted that she is updating her booklet. She essentially agreed with Woodruff that I first needed to control my glucose levels. With the elevated blood sugar, I agree with lowering carbs, monitoring glucose, A1C, insulin, can be key both for diabetes and prostate cancer. If you're consuming healthy fats, you can liberalize those some, as you'll need to replace the carb calories to some degree, she said. She recommended that I consult with her on the phone. I pointed out I would be in San Francisco the following week. I went to see Ledesma in person. This was about 2 months after the diabetes diagnosis and 1 month after I started eating intuitively, when hungry and not forcing carbs. She figured I was eating at most 40 grams of carbs per day. I was down about 15 pounds in 2 months. She told me I likely was in ketosis, burning fat stores. Here's what she advised. Half of my plate should always be filled with tons of vegetables, and those vegetables could be kale salad. It could be a broccoli and cauliflower sauté. It could be zucchini. It could be a handful of tomatoes. It could be sugar snap peas. It could be beets. It could be some carrots. Whatever you enjoy. Consider the following vegetables in the starchy carb category: green peas, corn, butternut squash, acorn squash, sweet potatoes. She recommended I keep those to 25% or less of a plate. Get tons of greens on a daily basis, whether that's a green smoothie because you didn't have the cooked greens, or you're traveling and you bring along a green powder, or you're in San Francisco so you can get green vegetable juices where it's just pure vegetable juice, but not having a fruit component in there. Fats ought to include avocado, olive oil, almonds, or nuts or seeds. These fats would be much preferred over butter or ice cream or cheese and red meats. Limit red meat to not more than once a week, but possibly less, and go for high quality. In terms of the dairy, there is definitely a link of dairy and prostate. Some feel like it's more a link with advanced prostate cancer. There isn't enough evidence to not have dairy at all, but be cautious with dairy consumption. Eat fish, such as wild salmon, sablefish, black cod, sardines, and herring. Now I have two dietitians in my corner, and they agree that I should follow an anti-inflammatory approach to help with type 2 diabetes, as well as prostate cancer and cardiac disease. Lots of chronic diseases to take care of. When I saw Woodruff in September, she said I most likely was in ketosis. I had lost 25 pounds 3 months after diagnosis. I underwent follow-up glucose testing. In 3 months, my fasting glucose had dropped to 90 from 141, and my A1C fell to 5.9% from 7.8%. I was close to non-diabetic levels. It was a gift for my 70th birthday. The bottom line, from heart disease to prostate cancer and diabetes, is to fight inflammation by adjusting your diet. As a next step, Ledesma suggested I undergo a micronutrient testing to determine if any supplements could help me to even better control my blood sugar and potentially improve my health in other ways. I'm psyched and aiming to reach normal blood glucose levels. I want to kick diabetes ass. Lastly, a patient's journey. What is just right? And this was from November 24th, 2017. At my latest visit to my primary care physician, he flattered me. He was impressed that in 3 months I had turned around a newly diagnosed case of diabetes through diet and metformin, the commonly prescribed med to control blood glucose levels in patients like me with type 2 diabetes. I dropped 25 pounds. My fasting blood glucose fell from 140 milligrams per deciliter to 90 milligrams per deciliter, from full-blown diabetes to a normal level. My A1C went from 7.8% to 5.9%, from diabetes to just above normal in the pre-diabetes zone. He declared me his best diabetes patient ever. Maybe it was hyperbole, but he seemed genuine in his sentiment. It made me feel good. Encouraged by my new status as a best ever patient, I told him what I intended to do next. I said I intended to lower my blood glucose to normal levels. My ophthalmologist and podiatrist and two dietitians suggested I do this and said I might be able to go off metformin. I seem to be tolerating 2,000 milligrams of metformin fine. I do experience nausea and lack of appetite at times. No one knows why. Maybe metformin, maybe my low-carb diet. My doctor's reaction was startling. His neck turned red, and I thought I saw a bulging vein as he took notes on his computer. Without meaning to do so, I struck a nerve. "Don't do that," he insisted. He said 5.9% was great, and I ought to aim to maintain at the pre-diabetic level. He said I could create other health problems if I slipped too low. I aimed for normal, which I thought ought to be the goal, but I was surprised by what my PCP told me. His philosophy is that as humans get older, they're destined to develop diabetes. His fatalistic view may be right. I think he's seen many of his patients in this middle to upper middle suburban income area fail to control diabetes. He said he can't easily teach his patients how to count carbs and use calculators. He favors a simple approach with moderation and medication, with perhaps a greater potential to succeed, a half loaf rather than my no loaf approach. I haven't had regular bread since I was diagnosed, though I hear the siren call of an Italian sub or a burger on a bun. I have burgers sans buns. I did have one hot dog on a bun. I'm not perfect. He said I ought to enjoy myself and have the occasional pasta or pizza. He feels glucose control fails when strict rules are applied. He told me previously I should expect to be on metformin for life. Maybe he's right, but so far I'm comfortable with what I'm doing. My wife and sons have joined me on a low-carb lifestyle. I loved pasta, but it turns out I like mock pasta made from spiralized zucchini and butternut squash. It looks like pasta after being sautéed or even microwaved and covered with a low-carb tomato sauce. I loved pizza, but I like homemade pizza with crusts made from almond flour or riced cauliflower and topped with cheese and mushrooms. I've been with my intern for nearly 10 years. For the most part, he's done well by me. He's referred me out when I had questions he couldn't answer, such as a DNA test showing I was a poor responder to Plavix, clopidogrel, after a STEMI in 2005. In that case, my community cardiologist had put me on the then relatively new drug, which I stayed on for a record-setting 8 years, before my new academic preventive cardiologist asked why I was still on Plavix. Why did I change doctors? My original cardiologist told me he was aware of the poor responders to Plavix and that there were alternatives. He said I should stay on Plavix and he'd change drugs when you have your next heart attack. Yikes! The episode with my current internist left me perplexed. I've heard horror stories from other patients, but I feel I've had more than my share. I wonder if there's something in me as a patient that prompts unusual exam room exchanges. For example, here is something that occurred more than a decade ago with a family physician who was my primary care doctor back from the 90s through the turn of the century. I liked her. The liberal in me liked the fact that I had a female African-American physician. Then something happened. Maybe nothing that happens in an exam room would surprise you, but try this. My longtime family practitioner suddenly became very solicitous and asked me all sorts of questions about my family. It was a new approach, but seemed reasonable. That's what family practitioners are supposed to do, right? Enter the Twilight Zone, at least as far as I was concerned. Bring up the music. She pointed to her white lab coat and said, "See this?" It was a silver cross. She said she considered her medical practice part of her ministry. My eyebrows started to go up. Alarms went off. Holy Moses! She asked me if I knew the seven names of God in the Old Testament. I had to admit I didn't. She asked me to learn them and recite them the next time I came in. Then she informed me that Jews like me, I'm not particularly religious and had not previously discussed religion, mine or hers, may be the people of the book. But evangelicals like her knew more about the Old Testament. I was very uncomfortable. I decided I needed to bail on the practice, but the Ten Commandments of HMO rules held me in place. I'm out of that HMO now. I learned a lesson. I complained to the practice manager. I was amazed to find that she took my side and said they wanted to keep me in the practice. Could I see their medical director? I did. That's my current doctor. I told him what had transpired. He said his colleague sometimes gets like that. He asked me if I'd have a problem with an Arab Christian as a doctor. I said no. But in my view, storm clouds are gathering again as I bump up against his beliefs about treating T2D. I'm sticking with him for now. I like him, and I like being affiliated with a nearby hospital in case something comes up. I still want to see if I reach a new normal range with my A1C, and then we'll continue the conversation. I may have to find a new captain on my health team, maybe not. I'm mulling. Should I stay at a 5.9% A1C? I am close to normal. Maybe I can reach 5.2% or even lower. Or maybe find a diabetes expert to manage my diabetes. Thank you for tuning in to Sound Body today. Stay well and come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.